Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
If you'd like to go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Ruth chapter 2, we're going to be spending some time in Ruth chapters 2 and 3 tonight. It's towards the beginning of the Old Testament, Joshua, Judges, and Ruth, a short book that has powerful messages contained in it. We do have a lot that's taking place, and as Jonathan already mentioned, I hope that we're praying about some of the events that are coming up in these next few days. Thankful for the Golden Age banquet that will be tomorrow. Jack Malone and Mary Alice and others who helped them in this ministry do a wonderful job. It just seems like our numbers continue to grow as Jack leads our senior adult ministry, and we want to continue to incorporate more people to be involved. And so if you haven't already signed up for that or are planning on that, we want you to be part of it. It's always a neat moment when we have our young people, our youth group that prepares the dinner and the entertainment, and the entertainment is always fascinating. I mean, that's going to be exciting. You won't want to miss that. And it's just a neat reminder that we're all in this together as a church family. No matter what our age group or our experiences, we're all finding ways to have fellowship and to work alongside each other in ministry. We also want to keep in mind our special Sunday that's coming up. Noel Whitlock will be with us. He'll be preaching for us in the morning. And then we'll have a combined adult Bible class. All of our other classes will meet as usual, but our adult classes will stay in here. And that will have the added advantage of allowing our fellowship hall to be ready for our potluck right after that. And after our potluck, we'll have our evening service in the fellowship hall. Noel will share a devotional thought with us, and we'll be singing, and that'll just be a neat time to be together. These are great opportunities for you to invite someone to come with you. It's always good if we're going to have a meal together to invite a friend, but hopefully this will be a chance where you can bring someone with you. And that we can connect with them and get to know them and see if there are ways we can be an encouragement to them. Right after that day, that Sunday, our Monday, we'll have our annual preaching workshop that we've hosted for the last several years. We will have a lot of men involved in that on Monday. And then we're going to have something special, kind of a treat for the guys who were involved in Columbia Bible Institute for so many years. We're not hosting that in the format that we've had it in the past, but Kirk Brothers will stay with us Monday night, and then Tuesday morning he'll teach some sessions for several who wanted to stay the night at Graymere Hall. And so there's just going to be a lot of great teaching going on. Several of you are volunteering to help with breakfast and with other things, and that's going to be exciting. And then next month is when Revival, our youth ministers retreat, will take place. And I'm just grateful to be part of a church family that values equipping ministers and providing resources, and it's just a really neat experience to be involved in that. And so although you might not get to hear from all those who are blessed by it, I just want you to know there are ministers all over who are blessed by this congregation allowing us to use these facilities and to have some of the folks here on staff and volunteers helping to make that a reality for them. So thank you for that. When we left off in Ruth and Naomi's story, we left them at a difficult place, a place that didn't seem to have any hope. But they landed in Bethlehem. They came back to Naomi's home. And what unfolds in Ruth chapters 2 and 3 is a story of a worthy woman, of someone who proves herself to be worthy, and also a man who proves himself to be worthy. Now, it is around Valentine's Day, so chances are there have been some movies that have either come out, or maybe you've seen some on TV that are romantic comedies where you have two individuals that maybe it seems unlikely that they could end up together. Maybe it's one of those movies where you watch the whole time wondering, are they going to end up together? And it's a love story that unfolds. And so whether it's a classic love story like Romeo and Juliet, kind of the star-crossed lovers as Romeo is calling out to Juliet on the balcony, maybe it's something more like You've Got Mail, where you have two individuals that they fall in love with each other over email, but they don't really know who the other one is, and so there's kind of a surprise towards the end of the movie. Whatever the story or whatever the movie is, there's always a place when the two characters meet. There's always kind of that first meeting, that first moment. And generally, if you're watching a movie, you can tell by that first moment that, oh, this is going to be special. These two are going to fall in love. Maybe you're watching the Hallmark Channel and you're watching Hallmark movies, and you might even know what's coming, but you still want to see that moment, right? That moment where they first meet. And so I say all that to say we're in Valentine's mode and we're thinking about love stories, but Ruth is a Valentine's Day story you will not see in the movies. This is a different kind of story that unfolds, and we have to be careful that we don't look at the book of Ruth with 21st century American eyes. If we only have our perspective, we might miss some of the power behind what's taking place, and we might also be confused because there are going to be some customs that show up, there are going to be some things that are a little bit unusual to us. So as we work through chapters 2 and specifically chapter 3, I want us to keep that in mind. As you're walking through, this is not going to unfold the way a normal romantic comedy or a story of two star-crossed lovers would unfold for us, but it's powerful, not only because it really took place, but because it teaches us the power of a worthy life. Now, just to recap, at the very beginning, Naomi and Ruth had both gone through an incredible time of loss. Naomi had lost her husband, and Ruth had lost her husband, who was also Naomi's son. So Naomi had lost her husband, her two sons. She has two daughters-in-law that both want to go with her. She says, "You need to stay here in Moab. I'm going back to Bethlehem. I'm going back to my home. There's nothing for you there." Orpah goes back and stays. Ruth goes with Naomi. When they come back to Bethlehem, there's a buzz around town. Could this really be Naomi? And Naomi says, "Call me Mara," which means bitter. In other words, I'm not the person you knew. I'm different now. I've had some experiences in life that have made me bitter. And maybe some of us can resonate with that idea of, you know, things have happened to me. I'm not who I used to be. Maybe I'm not as positive or as upbeat as I used to be because of what I've dealt with. But when we get to chapter 2, we know there's no longer a famine in Bethlehem. That's the original reason that Naomi and her husband left. And so they left because of the famine, but now that they're back, there's no longer a famine, but Naomi and Ruth are both widows in a time in which it was a patriarchal society. So one of the most vulnerable groups of people would have been widows, those who no longer had husbands or sons whose estate they could live in, who could provide for them. And so Ruth decides at the beginning of chapter 2 that she wanted to go and to, in verse 2, in the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Now, it's worth pausing just to remind ourselves, here's one of those signposts that we're dealing with a different culture, that this is going to be different than we normally think of. Because the way God had provided laws for his people, he had made provisions for those who were poor, those who were in need. And so when you had individuals that were harvesting grain, when they would be reaping, they would not get just every single bit of their property, but they would leave some margin around the corners. They would leave a space for people who were in need to come and to glean among the fields. So what Ruth is asking to do isn't trespassing on someone's property and stealing from them. What she's asking to do is consistent with the law that God had given his people. But she's also looking for hope for the future. And she says, maybe if I do that, maybe I can find favor in the sight of someone. maybe we can find a way that we're not just living hand to mouth, that it's not just what can we get for the day to survive. Maybe there's something beyond survival. And so she goes in verse 3, and we won't have all of these scriptures on the screen, so you may want to be following along. She departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now, hopefully that name rings a bell, because that's a connection to Naomi's family, the family of Naomi's husband who has died. And so the place where she has come is in the field of a relative named Boaz. So Ruth is willing to go out. She's willing to reap, do whatever it takes to help her and Naomi survive. And we're going to notice in chapters 2 and 3, there's a close relationship between Naomi and Ruth. We get some of that in chapter 1, but we really get insight into a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law who are caring for each other and who realize they're all that the other one has. So in verse 4, behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to a servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? Now again, here's another signpost that we're dealing with a different culture. Because this is a patriarchal culture, when he says, whose young woman is this? It's not something that we might think of today. That's an incredibly negative, that's a chauvinistic comment. What he was asking was, whose household does she belong to? She's here. Does she belong to another family, another household, another estate? And because it's a patriarchal culture, he's trying to think of whose family is she connected with? And the servant in charge of the reapers in verse 6 said, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then in verse 8, Boaz said to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. Again, here's a third cultural signpost difference. This may sound to us like just being kind. This is just general kindness, that if you want to have some grain, that's fine. You can have some water. We wouldn't think much about offering food to someone that is in need, but there's more going on here. He says, number one, don't go in anyone else's field, sort of indicating, as long as you're in my field, I can take care of you. He's instructed his servants not to bother her, and we don't know what that would entail, but we know that in that time, for a widow to have some protection of the landowner here, that would have been a very positive thing. He says, in fact, I want you to go with the ladies that are out here reaping, and I want you to even have the water that they have drawn. Now remember, he's speaking to a Moabite woman, and we spent some time a couple of weeks ago looking at the restrictions and the separation between Israelites and Moabites and their history of conflict. So it makes sense if we understand the depth of the kindness that Boaz is showing here, then her response made sense in verse 10 when she falls on her face, bowing to the ground and saying to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? This is a serious act of kindness that Boaz is extending. And he replies in verse 11, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. So three different times in chapter 2, we see Boaz noticing Ruth and her finding favor with him. And it's really a contrast to what we would read if we went back one book to the book of Joshua. Or rather, back Joshua and Judges, and then Ruth. When we see the progression of what happens in Joshua when the Israelites take the land, and then what happens in Judges, as we see cycle after cycle of Israelites falling away, a common theme that carries through that is the abuse of landowners to people that worked for them, to the poor. They didn't seem to care about what was taking place in those lives as long as they had their crops, as long as they were growing and their estate was growing. And sometimes there were even landowners who would move boundary markers so they could have something more, they could have more land. So Boaz stands out in that field as a contrast because he's doing what's good. He's doing what's kind. He seems like he has the kind of attitude that Jesus talks about in Matthew 25. When Jesus describes the coming of the day of the Lord and the Lord saying to someone that I was hungry and you fed me, I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink, I was naked and you clothed me, I was in prison and you visited me, and they asked after the series of statements that are made, when did we see you and do all this? And he said, inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, you did that to me. It's that kind of mindset that Boaz seems to have here. And so he notices her, and it's interesting that her reputation has already preceded her. Again, it was a little bit of a stir when Naomi comes to town and they start asking, could this really be Naomi? So chances are, word had traveled, things had gotten around. You know, word does tend to travel. And so they knew everything that was going on. Boaz had found this. He recognized what she had done, and he describes her as someone who is coming to seek shelter, seek refuge under the wings of the Lord. We don't know how much Ruth understood about the commitment she was making to Naomi, but what Boaz says is, when you have come back here, you are seeking shelter under the wings of the Lord. And so she does that. She gleans in the field. She's able to go back to Naomi. She tells Naomi, the name of the man whom I work today is Boaz. And then in verse 20, Naomi gets that excited sort of feeling of maybe a matchmaker. Here we go. This man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Okay, signpost number 4, that this is a different culture than we're dealing with. Usually you wouldn't expect a mother-in-law to talk to a daughter-in-law and say, by the way, this is a close relative to your husband. And so because of that, this is good news. But the reason it was good news is because in a world that was patriarchal in nature, a world in which you had men who were running the estates and widows were vulnerable, there were customs and laws in place where if you had someone who passed away, that a close family member, a kinsman redeemer could come and could marry his wife and would provide safety and would keep the family estate together. And so in Naomi's mind, she's thinking of Boaz as a kinsman redeemer. This is exciting to her. And so then she gives Ruth some instructions in Ruth chapter 3. This is where we see that I don't think there's a Hallmark movie that has this exact plot, and we're really delving into a difference in cultures. So I want to read a few verses from Ruth chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now, is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maid you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first, by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true I am a close relative. However, There is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. Now, this is a little different for us to try to envision. Now, the first parts of it we understand. We understand Naomi telling Ruth, okay, this is the situation. Here is someone that I want you to have security. I want you to end up with this person. So I want you to go and bathe and freshen yourself up and anoint yourself with and go and be ready, you know, be ready to meet him and make a good impression on him. Now, this is the harvest time, and so he's there at the threshing floor and going through the process of separating the wheat from the chaff. And so there was a special place that he would do that, a special building, kind of an outdoor area that would have walls that would allow him to separate that, to allow the wind to separate the wheat from the chaff. And so he's working and doing that. He eats and drinks and finds a place to sit down and to sleep. And then she comes in, and there are a couple of phrasings here in the text that have caused some people to say, what exactly is happening here? And so I want us just to walk through the customs that are taking place. First of all, in our culture today, especially if we were watching a movie or a TV show where a woman decides she's interested in a man and she waits until it's late at night and he's fallen asleep to go and to approach him, we would have a different set of expectations as to what she is wanting to happen. But it's worth remembering, this is a different culture. There would not have been many times where a Moabite woman who was poor and who was going through and gathering the leftovers on the outskirts of the crops there could ever have a conversation with the landowner. And so the opportunity for her to be able to go and speak to him in private is going to have to happen at a time where there aren't other people around, number one. Number two, there's also a clear indication when she makes a statement to him, even though this idea of uncovering his feet and then spreading his cloth over her because she is a close relative, we look at that and we say, I don't know, that doesn't sound quite right to us. But it's interesting to see his response. What is his response when she asks that question? He clearly understands it as a marriage proposal. He understands that what's happening is she's not going in and asking for him to do anything, to have a one-night experience, or to go in and say, hey, we're going to do something that no one's going to know about and we'll keep it discreet. She says, no, I'm a close relative. She's proposing marriage to him. That's his clear understanding of what's happening. And some of those phrases are a little bit different for us, but the same phrasing that's used when she makes that request, when she says, spread your covering over your maid, it's the same kind of phrasing that he used in chapter 2 when he said, you have come to seek refuge under the wings of the Lord. It's almost as if he looked at her and said, what you've done is you've come to seek refuge under the wings of the Lord. And she goes to him and she says, I'm coming to seek refuge under your covering in your household because you are a close relative. Again, it's different than our culture. But what's clearly being stated here is that Ruth is showing some initiative. Well, Naomi may be showing the initiative, getting Ruth in there to essentially make a marriage proposal. And he responds in a way that tells us a lot about Boaz. Number one, he responds by thanking her for being willing to make that proposal to him. It seems that he's older than her, and he says, you're not going after younger men. You're willing to do that. But secondly, he says, I'm not really the closest relative. And so he wants to handle it in the right way. He wants to make sure that the closest relative has the opportunity and understands the situation. But then he makes a statement that I think is maybe the most significant one in the whole chapter. Did you notice the way he says in verse 11, all my people in the city know you are a woman of excellence. Another way to translate that would be a worthy woman. The reason I think that's important is because I want us to turn over to the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs 31, we get a character description of a worthy woman. Now, the same Hebrew word, the same phrase that's used to describe Ruth as a woman of excellence or a worthy woman is the exact same phrase that's used in Proverbs 31 in verse 10 to say an excellent wife who can find. That's essentially a worthy woman. The context here is indicating that it is a wife, but what we get is Boaz looking at Ruth and saying, you're a worthy woman. How does Proverbs 31 describe a worthy woman? Her worth is far above jewels, verse 10. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she is to be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. What a powerful description of a worthy woman. But what we get in Proverbs 31 is something that we get several times in Proverbs, which is we get a broad character description. I think sometimes it could be possible to look at Proverbs 31 and to think, she did all that in one day? That's the daily schedule? That you wake up early and you're out and you're doing things and buying and selling things and looking at land and buying and selling and feeding your family, and then you stay up all night making clothes for your family because you know you've got to take care of them, and that's every day. In other words, to be a worthy woman, I have to look exactly like every aspect of Proverbs 31. Well, I think we need to step back and remember what Proverbs is doing is painting a picture. It's giving us a character description. This is the kind of person who is a worthy woman. And I think it's significant that when Scripture gives us a specific example with that phrase, it gives us Ruth. I've had conversations with individuals sometimes, with Christian ladies who are not married, and read Proverbs 31 and have said, you know, I kind of feel bad when I read Proverbs 31. How can I really be a worthy woman if I don't have a marriage, if I don't have a family? It's possible for a woman who's married but doesn't have children to look at Proverbs 31 and say, well, how can I really be a worthy woman if I don't have all that's described here, if I don't have children that are rising up and calling me blessed? And so it's interesting to me that when Boaz says to Ruth, she is a worthy woman, at that time she is not married and she does not have children, but she's been acting as a woman of excellence, a worthy woman. In other words, a worthy life is possible. No matter what stage of life we're in, it's possible for us to live lives that are worthy. A worthy life is possible, but it's not easy. If I had to try to summarize what we get out of Ruth chapters 2 and 3, it's that a worthy life is not easy, but it is possible for us to live. It wouldn't have been easy for Ruth and Naomi. I mean, just imagine where they're coming from, how easy it would have been to just sort of try to find ways to kind of scrape by. But there's something in Ruth that wants her to take care of Naomi, and she's going to go out and she's going to reap, and she has a reputation of being a caregiver. She lives a worthy life even when it seems like the circumstances of life are against her. And Boaz, as a landowner in a time when it was popular for landowners to cheat other people, to abuse the people that worked for them, to only be concerned with what they could get, he has the kindness of heart to see someone in need and to help her and for her to find favor in his sight. He's living a worthy life as well. I know that on Sunday nights, we're thinking about what's going to happen in the coming week. Sometimes the weekend is a reprieve from all the pressures at work or all the pressures at school. And Sunday night, you kind of have that back-to-reality moment where you realize, boy, Monday morning is going to come soon, and then my schedule is going to happen. And look at all the things that are lined up. Just want to encourage you tonight that living a worthy life is not easy. It is possible. If someone in Ruth's circumstances, with everything she's been through, was able to live a worthy life, if someone in Boaz's position, when it would have been easy not to, was able to live a worthy life, then you and I can do that too. And there's probably another reason that this story wouldn't show up on the Hallmark Channel or in a movie screen. It's because you have two people that are choosing to do what's right. Sometimes that's not seen as interesting storytelling. A lot of times we want to have flawed heroes that really are struggling with something, and we watch the struggle. And so to see two people that choose to do the right thing, maybe that wouldn't be considered as interesting by Hollywood or by our cultural standards, but I think it's pretty powerful that Scripture shows us these two individuals seeking to live a worthy life. This week, tomorrow, the next day, the day after that, no matter what you're facing, seek ways that you can live a worthy life. Ruth shows us it doesn't have to look at like Proverbs 31 in every regard, but can we live the kind of life that fits with that picture Proverbs 31 paints? No matter what situation we're in right now, can we aspire to live that kind of life? We won't see it glamorized in movies. We won't see it glorified in our culture, but God will see it, and He'll be magnified in our lives. It may be that you need to become a Christian tonight, that you need to decide to live a life where you're seeking to be worthy in living, not that you could earn the worth that God has placed on us by sending His Son, but that in becoming a child of God, you could seek to live a life of excellence, of serving Him, and allowing Him at times along the way when you fail and when you fall to pick you up, allowing the church family around you to dust you off and to help you as you walk on that journey. If you need to become a child of God tonight, put Christ on in baptism, we would love to celebrate that with you. It may be that you need prayers, that as you've thought about what the week has in store for you, there are just some challenges where you need encouragement and comfort, and you need a church family to walk with you through that time. If we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and as we sing together.